This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is Mason Vera Payne, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Nintendo recently announced that they'll be selling Super NES Classic, which will be released on September 29th. But what is the Super NES Classic? Review and preview editor at EGM Now, Ray Carcello, joins me to give a breakdown on the Super NES Classic. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me, Mason. I really appreciate it.
Could you tell me, why do you think Nintendo brought out the Super NES Classic? Don't you think, like, retro's kind of done?
I don't think retro's done at all. I think, if anything, Nintendo is the prime example of how nostalgia is still a key driving force in video games. I think the bigger question is that why stop the NES Classic when it at the peak of its popularity to then just start churning this out? It kind of seems, if anything, they're undermining themselves and the potential of bringing their virtual console feature to the Switch at some point in the future. But I think that retro is still as strong as ever, and obviously the lineup that they churned out and the excitement surrounding this new piece of hardware proves that.
Well, the reason I was saying that is because there's already kind of consoles out there. The biggest one, I think, is from Hyperkin. They have Retron 5. They have a bunch of different Retrons that can play retro games. And for theirs, it's only 21 games that are coming out. And for me, the only one that's kind of the shines is Star Fox 2. But I mean, why bring it out at all? To me, they're just trying to grab money, or is this like a sign that Nintendo's in trouble, or is this kind of like a promotional thing for, you know, Virtual Console?
Well, I mean, first off, that Nintendo is definitely not in trouble. The Switch has been selling like hotcakes. They can't keep the hardware on the shelves. And everything that Nintendo has done, including the NES Classic, at least in the past year, has really kind of put the company back on good standing. So after the flop that was the Wii U, Nintendo is looking like they've hit clear waters and smooth sailing from here on out. In terms of a money grab, it could be that. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it could be something that, because the Virtual Console isn't available on the Switch yet, it could be something that they're just trying to appease people with, or they're trying to, for when they do roll out the Virtual Console, something to kind of try and build hype around that. Because you're right, there are a lot of different ways. I mean, even I said it, the same thing. There's a lot in an article I did a while back. There's tons of emulators out there.
Yeah.
There's tons of ways you can get your hands on these games without having to pay Nintendo. Obviously, the SNES Classic and the NES Classic, they will run much better than most emulators you'll probably find on the open market. And obviously Nintendo having that original access to that original code, there will be no degradation whatsoever. But, you know, if you're a collector, this is something that you're going to want. If you're somebody who, you know, I have friends with small children, this is an easy way for them to introduce their kids to the games that they grew up with. But I can't say it's completely a money grab, but it definitely seems like it's a way for Nintendo to build hype for the Virtual Console before it gets there, hold those fans over, and make a tidy profit at the same time.
Now, I wasn't lucky enough to get one of the NES Classics, and I wasn't really going to try to, only because I have a Retron 5, and I kind of like having the cartridges in my hand. I mean, you want the full experience if you're going to go retro. But my thing is how does the NES Classic work? Could I have put like my original controller in it, or I had to use theirs? Like, what came with it?
So the NES Classic is basically a miniaturized version of the original NES, and it has it plugs directly into your TV with an HDMI cord, so you get, you know, as much as those old games could, the best looking graphics possible, you know, brighter colors, crisper pixels, and then yes, it came with controllers that had to be plugged into that system. Because the system is smaller in size, it does not use the traditional NES controllers from way back when. But it does come with controllers that you can plug in with it, so it wasn't too much of a... you didn't have to go out and buy a bunch of new ones, although there were third-party developers like Niko, who makes a lot of third-party accessories. who were making controllers that had longer cords, for example. That seemed to be the biggest complaint, is that Nintendo, not only were the consoles miniaturized, but the cords were as well. So a lot of people were complaining how close they had to get to the television in order to play the game. So that was really the only downside to what was packed in with the NES Classic. But it was pretty much good to go as soon as you open up the box.
Is that the same case for the Super NES? Like, it's going to come with everything in it?
Yes. I would expect the exact same thing from the Super NES Classic, and that it should be good to go right out of the box. Hopefully they've solved the cord conundrum and learned their lesson from the NES Classic. But we'll have to wait and see on that one.
You know, there have been other plug-and-play type of games. You know, Atari has come out with a bunch of them, you know, like where it's kind of standalone. You just plug it in the TV and it works. Sega Genesis already, you know, they had one. Why is it that Nintendo seems to be like, oh, my God, everybody's going geek for it? But, you know, it's been done.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it comes back to the nostalgia factor. I think that I think the quality of the product and the games list that's included, if I remember correctly, I believe the Sega one was actually done by, like, a third party who had, you know, with Sega's blessing had done it, whereas this is coming from Nintendo themselves. And, of course, you know, since we were kids, that Nintendo seal of approval still carries a lot of weight with a lot of people.
Yeah, it does.
So you're expecting a good product right off, you know, for sure, that this is going to work. It's going to work for a long time. And I think just the lineup, I think that you're spending less than $100. And you know, in the NES Classic version, you're getting 30 games. In the SNES Classic, you're getting 21 games. You know, you figure each game comes to about $4 a pop. It's less than what it would cost on virtual console in most cases. And so I think there's also that aspect that you're really kind of getting a bang for your buck. You're getting a bargain, as well as you're getting this tremendous amount of quality.
You know, when it comes to the virtual console, from what I was reading, it's going to end up being like the Netflix for games. Do you think that's true? And when can I look forward to seeing this? Because it keeps just saying 2018.
Yeah, Nintendo, as usual, is kind of keeping mum when it comes to specific release dates. They're until they know for sure, they very much try and just kind of give a TBD. They do that with a lot of their games, of course, and they're doing this now with services. I would expect, though, Virtual Console to come earlier in 2018 than later, just because they're going to need the Virtual Console to really show off the great potential of the Switch. You know, there's going to be nothing better than people downloading old games and then bringing them on the road and playing them with their friends or their buddies, or playing them with their kids and doing like what they did when they were children, you know, and having that local co-op experience. I think the Virtual Console is going to be great for that. So I would expect that to come out sooner rather than later. Nintendo is hard at work. First, they got to get their online network completely up to speed, which is going to still take a couple more months. But once that is completely, all the kinks have been worked out of that, obviously some games are already using it for free, like ARMS, that just came out a couple weeks ago. But once that network is set, then you'll probably see Virtual Console come shortly after. I would say probably first quarter 2018 if I was a betting man. As for the Netflix subscription, yeah, I mean, it's basically what Nintendo's trying to do is trying to combine the models of what Microsoft and Sony are doing in terms of paying for your online internet access and also offering you something in return. You know, kind of like what Microsoft does with Games with Gold, Sony does with their free games if you're a PS Plus member.
Yeah.
Nintendo's basically trying to do the same thing, but instead of giving you more recent games, they're going to give you older games. They're going to give you classic games. They're going to give you those games from your childhood, and they're going to do it at a price that's only a fraction of what Microsoft and Sony's online services are. So you're still going to get to play games online just like those services. You're going to get free games just like those services. But it's going to cost you only a third of what Microsoft and Sony service cost. But you're going to get classic games instead of more recent games.
You know what? There's a trend. There's the NES, the Super NES. Do you think they're going to come out with like a GameCube next or a Nintendo 64?
I would guess, honestly, either N64 or maybe even a Game Boy.
Ooh.
Something to do with the Game Boy. That's where I would put my money. I think that Nintendo doesn't want to go so far as the GameCube yet. And definitely in chronological order, they would do the N64.
Yeah.
But if they are going to push people to the Virtual Console in early 2018, The only thing that I could see that might be really interesting is if they do some sort of Game Boy Micro again and release a bunch of special games for that.
All right, cool. Before I let you go, I have to talk about this. You tweeted out yesterday that there's a DC Looney Tunes crossover that's happening. What is that about? I had to go look that up, and I couldn't really find much about it other than the variant cover art.
Yeah, so basically this month, DC, in terms of, they've been doing this a lot lately. You had Justice League versus Power Rangers. You had Batman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles teaming up. And this just seems to be their latest attempt at trying to get eyeballs, trying to get people to get into comic book stores, buying physical editions of comic books again, because it's been a continually downward trend for both of the big two for a long time. And this latest crossover, I think the first issues come out today, actually. You have Wonder Woman versus the Tasmanian Devil. You have Martian Manhunter versus Marvin the Martian. You have the Legion of Superheroes versus Bugs Bunny.
What?
You have Batman versus Elmer Fudd. And you have Jonah Hex versus Yosemite Sam. And each comic finds a different way to try and work these characters into the mythos in a way that makes sense. So the Tasmanian Devil, for example, is in the labyrinth on Themyscira. Diana Prince, obviously Wonder Woman, has to go and find a special item. But not only is the Minotaur there, but also the Tasmanian Devil. There's two guards to the labyrinth. So kind of dealing with that Greek mythology aspect. In Batman, Elmer Fudd is a contract killer. He uses his shotgun to hunt people down. And Porky Pig makes a cameo as like a bar owner.
Oh, my God.
And supposedly Batman has to stop Elmer Fudd from being this, continuing his psychopathic serial killer, contract killer ways with his trusty shotgun. Similarly, Yosemite Sam is a mine owner in the old Wild West. He's kind of a corrupt mine owner. He's rich. But him and Jonah Hex get out into a classic six-shooter duel because everybody's complaining that Yosemite Sam, you know, isn't paying his workers enough and all this other stuff, and people basically hire Jonah Hex to kind of stop him. But obviously Yosemite Sam is not defenseless at all when it comes to an old-school duel in the Wild West. So it's interesting how they've worked these classic Looney Tunes characters into the DC universe, but it's just a gimmick. It's just a way for people to try and go buy these comics. It seems like these classic Looney Tunes characters in more realistic art is really cool. But if you get past that initial effect, there's really not a lot. There's not a lot of substance to this, and I don't see this being a continuing thing in the DC universe.
It sounds, you know, I was a little curious if they were going to do it all cartoony and how ridiculous that would look. But for it to be realistic, that does pique your interest a little bit because, you know, an artist's interpretation of what a badass Bugs Bunny would look like, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, I think that's, and what's funny is that some of the comics, like Martian Manhunter, it's actually like an old school duel issue where the first half is, there's two stories, and the first story is realistic with Marvin Martian, and then the second half is completely cartoony. I think Legion of Superheroes with Bugs Bunny is doing something similar, where that one's on a little more on the kind of cartoony side, but most of them are going for that more realistic tone.
You know, I stopped collecting comic books like a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago. It seems like a few, but it's so much has changed. And it seems like for me, you know, from the outside looking in, has this all turned into fan fiction at this point? It sounds like a bunch of kids grew up and they just started putting whatever they were writing about in grammar school into actual publication. And I'm just like, this is what's going on.
You know, Mesa, honestly, that's kind of the same feeling that I had when I kind of got out of, I used to go to the comic book store every week. I used to be one of those guys. I would honestly drop about close to $50 a week on comic
yep.
books. I'd buy everything and anything I could get my hands on. And I still have long boxes full of comics in my closets. But basically, I kind of came to that same conclusion about 4 years ago now. I say I've been clean for 4 years. Since I bought a weekly comic. I'll still buy a graphic novel every now and then with a collection, but I won't go week to week like I used to. I really feel that a lot of the quality of stories has been constantly declining. I would say, honestly, starting with J. Michael Straczynski's One More Day storyline in Spider-Man in 2007, I marked that as the real decline of comic books since then, because we've had such ridiculous storylines, event after event after event, constantly, especially from Marvel and DC, just trying to get people to get into their stores somehow, some way. And it's just because of that, the story quality has declined, because it's just comic book publishers desperately trying to get customers back into the stores to buy their stuff. And some people fall for it, some people don't. And honestly, it's why, no matter what they're doing, they've slowed the decline of comic books, but it hasn't stopped. And honestly, I think physical comic books are going to become a thing of the past probably within the next decade or so, and it's going to go all digital because people just aren't buying these stories anymore. I mean, from Spider Island to One More Day for Spider-Man to the New 52 for DC, that was an unmitigated disaster probably across the board, outside of a couple of surprises like Swamp Thing and Animal Man. That was an absolute disaster. And now they had to reboot the whole universe again. And honestly, everybody's just kind of sick of these new, you know, every comic character now has like four or five continuities. And I think people are kind of just tired of trying to keep track of stuff that used to be a lot simpler when we were younger.
You know, you're right about that, because you hit the nail right on the head about the story. In the 90s and maybe even early 2000s, it was Image Comics, I think, really forced Marvel and DC to be more creative story-wise, because they had brand new competition. You know, it's no more, people didn't want to see Superman anymore. People didn't want to see Spider-Man or Batman. So it forced them to like, oh, we have to really mature the characters. Now it seems like it's the stories are more about what's currently happening in life, you know, whether it's terrorists or if it's something to do with, you know, protests. And, you know, for me, and I'm sure everybody else, when you're playing video games or you're reading comics, I'm kind of trying to use it as an escape mechanism. I don't want to see more of this stuff, real life stuff, in my fantasy stuff. I want to see superheroes saving the day, because I need that a little bit of a morale boost. And I think they forgot that, and they kind of lost their way of like telling a really good complete story. And instead they keep like, oh, you know, we're just going to reboot everything, and you know, oh, it's a brand new world, so forget that past storyline, that's in world, you know, 1742, so you don't have to worry about it. It's like, what's going on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with you for the most part. I mean, there are times where comic books and video games, when they want to make a statement, and there have been, you know, over the years where they've done it eloquently, and they've done it with grace, and they've done it but they'll limit it to an issue or maybe two. And like you said, it seems every other comic is the issue of the day, on top of they're messing up their own continuities because of it. So they've gone too far with it, and now they're trying to bring it all back in. Again, DC just did the Rebirth storyline now, where they're trying to work Watchmen into the DC universe and use that as a restart point. They've gone too far to the point now where they've painted themselves, almost every character has been painted into a corner, and these comic creators don't know how to get them out. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with these characters in the future, what happens to the comic book industry in the future. Like I said, I have a kind of a bleak outlook on it, because of how the trends have been going the past 10 years. But they definitely need to get back to their roots, I think. And I think that will draw back not only the older audiences such as us, but will, you know, they need to have faith that will draw in the new audiences like it originally drew us in one day, or once along upon time.
Paul Wright, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. You gave me a lot of great insight about the DC Universe and comics in general, and the Super NES, and what we can expect from Nintendo in the future.
Oh, happy to help, Mason.
For those listening, check Ray out on his Twitter at Ray Carcello. That's one word, and that's spelled RayCarsillo. Also, check him out on EGMnow.com.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's masonverapaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.